In our incredibly divisive political climate, is there any hope for unity? That's a big question. And to answer it, I turn to Dr. Danegal Young. Dr. Young is a political and social psychologist who researches how conservatives and liberals understand the world. As she's shared in TED Talks, major news appearances, in the classroom as a professor, and in her book, Irony and Outrage. Dr. Young joined 10 Minute Talks to share how we can have better conversations and better relationships while navigating the political divide. This is our conversation. I wanted to talk about disgust sensitivity because I think it's one of the most interesting parts of the book.
This work is so wild. And when I start talking about how liberals and conservatives differ psychologically and even maybe physiologically, you know, folks don't want to think that that's true because nobody wants to be in a box, right? Everyone's like, no, I have these beliefs because I've learned these things and now I have these beliefs. I'm like, okay, well, you can think that, but maybe there's some underlying things going on that are leading you to be more likely to think this way. So the disgust sensitivity piece is fascinating because social and cultural conservatives, those are conservatives on matters of sort of race and sexuality and criminal justice, tend to have sort of this more almost acute olfactory system where they will be more likely to even smell things that other people will not smell, especially things that are unpleasant. And this disgust sensitivity, there's a psychological scale that we use to measure disgust sensitivity. And it's like the scale is kind of hilarious because it asks things like, you know, how disgusting is it to, do you put down a seat protector on a public restroom seat? how important is it to you that you wash your hands and things like this? So indeed, social and cultural conservatives have a higher disgust sensitivity. What that means is they're more likely to be triggered through a disgust response than liberals. And there were some subsequent studies that looked at this in the context of attitudes towards immigration, which were fascinating, that if you triggered a disgust response by having people really think long and hard and even write a paragraph or respond to some disgusting trigger, like a story about a nurse cleaning up vomit, and ask them their attitudes towards immigration, what you see is that those social and cultural conservatives who were primed with that disgust trigger, they were more likely to have more negative views towards immigration. What that means is that there are these sort of systems in play that probably have an adaptive role, right? There probably is an evolutionary function of these things to avoid disease, et cetera, but they also are able to be exploited. And that's what we always need to be wary of, is to what extent there are folks with something to gain from the exploitation of some of these traits that are probably highly functional traits.
That's so wild to me. It made me think, is there a way that we can use primers to create a greater sense of open-mindedness? Kind of like the idea of it's hard to hate someone up close. So if you're primed with a healthy relationship or even good media representation of someone who looks different, believes differently from you, would that
happen? Yeah, that's great. That's great. Actually, all of those things have been done in the context of different social science studies. So there are different kinds of primes that you can give people to see how they affect how they respond to other kinds of information. And you know what? People are amazing and they're malleable and they do respond to information in their environment. And so some research suggests that if you prime people by having them write about instances of them feeling safe or what it would feel like to be invincible as a superhero, right? That, especially when you're talking about folks for whom threat looms large, the idea of really meditating on what it would feel like to be invincible, that does then carry over into political beliefs, and it moves their beliefs more towards this moderate position, which is fascinating. So what do we do with that? What does that say? Well, it does say that how safe we feel in our lives and in our relationships is probably going to be beneficial. It probably will allow people to have more open-minded views towards people of other racial and ethnic groups. It also suggests that they'll be less likely to then maybe be punitive on certain issues or less reactive. I see it as a positive. I do. And it's funny, I was joking with a friend about how during the pandemic, now that everyone is always using hand sanitizer, we should, just because we're always sanitizing our hands, we should always feel really safe. And maybe some social and cultural conservatives will moderate their views to be a little more supportive of immigration policies or refugees if they're always putting hand sanitizer on. But you get it.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So if we are malleable, and if we're someone who recognizes, hey, maybe I am a bit too quick to jump to conclusions about someone that I don't know, what are some practical ways you can make yourself more open?
That's great. I think that having diverse experiences where you interact with folks who live very different lives from you, so, so important. I mean, I think that especially for folks that grew up in these sort of more cosmopolitan areas and they think rural America is a certain way and it's backwards, I would just suggest that you perhaps spend time there and recognize that the needs of that society and that those communities might be different from the needs of the communities that you are familiar with. And, you know, I remember it was a speech that Joe Biden gave at the University of Delaware, because that's his alma mater. And so he comes back a lot. And he was talking about how one of the things that he sees that has been harmful is that a lot of kids who grew up in rural America go away to college and never go back. And I thought, that is true, and because I'm one of those kids. And he said, then think about all of the values and the morals and the upbringing and the community that you left, and think about how great it would be for you to take the education that you've gotten and the skills you've gotten and go back, invest in your community. I do think that it would be really wild to see more of that. And I've wondered if through the pandemic, as people have been able to work virtually, a lot of folks, there've been stories of folks like moving out of cities. I wonder if that increasing the heterogeneity of our communities, ideologically, racially, in terms of culture, could benefit us in ways that we don't even know.
That's so interesting to think about. I think it gets into, too, you see all this vitriol on the news when you're watching it every day, and kind of like the extreme examples of human behavior and interactions. But when you go out to the grocery store on a daily basis, just those microtransactions can be so entirely different from everything you're seeing. And you have no idea what the people you're interacting with every day actually believe.
Yeah. And those are, and really that's the fabric of life, right? So one of the things that we're missing right now, you know, in the middle of a pandemic, are those sort of accidental, incidental interactions. And the more that we put ourselves into neighborhoods or communities of like-minded people, it might feel good because you're like, oh, I don't need to interact with those people that don't see the world like me. But to what end? Like, where are we gonna go ultimately if like there are, you know, cities and towns that are just one side or the other? Those incidental interactions and the ability to have empathy and connect on the experience of being human, that is necessary if we're going to make this experiment continue.
Yeah. Something else I love that you talk about too is that we can be a mixed bag of personality traits and political beliefs, because I don't think anyone's oblivious to the fact that our political culture is very divisive and you almost have no choice but to pick one group or the other. There's not a lot of room for gray space. Can you talk about that a little and the importance of allowing for people to occupy multiple sets of beliefs?
Remember, social identities are malleable and we have many of them. And so the more you reinforce one of those identities, the more likely you're going to see the world through that identity. And so if you surround yourself by people who think just like you, and if you interact with people who think just like you, that's going to continue to reinforce that same worldview. I was reminded of this because I traveled home to New Hampshire where I grew up, and I still have family there. And I spent some time there, and I still am very much that person, and I can very easily tap into that, you know, even the the libertarian spirit of a rural New Hampshire person, which is small government, live free or die, stay off my property, and don't touch my guns. And, you know, that's still in me, but that's not a part of me that I have had activated in a very long time, because I tend to interact with a lot of academics and a lot of folks who live in a more urban area. But I loved it. It was great. And it's so key, because then you realize, wow, these connections are there. And you recognize that they exist for a reason, and these communities have certain needs. And if you start to recognize that you yourself are a mixed bag, you yourself have some competing psychological traits and ideologies. Maybe in some circumstances, you're okay with uncertainty and novelty. And maybe in other circumstances, you need order. Maybe start thinking about those and recognizing that, like, even I internally am a mixed bag. So maybe it would be useful to explore some of these different traits and recognize the role that they play. And then when you can recognize that in yourself, you can also honor that and recognize that in others.
You write in the last chapter of the book, the United States political climate is so toxic that liberal and conservative opinion leaders would have each side believe that if the other side just disappeared, things would be fine. Taking it to that extreme of imagining a world where liberals only associate with liberals and vice versa, and we only have meaningful relationships with people who believe just like us, what would be the danger of that?
Honestly, you see it in the context of the insurrection on January 6th. I do think that there are individuals who truly believe that if the world were rid of Democrats, it would be better. It would be safer. It would be somehow more just for them and for their causes. And I do think that sometimes you see the same things on the left. My fear is that to only honor one approach is to ignore the fact that there are aspects of society that are effectively managed by folks very unlike yourself. And these are individuals and systems that are managed so well that you don't think about them. Especially with my liberal friends, I'm like, how much time do you really spend thinking about members of our armed services who are around the globe and domestically trying to make sure to keep the country safe? How much time do you think about those people? And the answer is probably not a lot. And the reason why is because it works. It is keeping us safe. They are doing their job, okay? Now, how much do our conservative friends think about the people who are studying and writing and dreaming and coming up with the next novel or the next tech platform? Do they spend a lot of time thinking about those people? No, right? Because in the end, they get to watch Netflix and the shows that they like are on the air. Well, those shows were created by people who were writing and dreaming and creating. That's where they came from. And they get to use the next social media app. Well, where'd the app come from? The app came from the innovation that stemmed from the creativity of those people who were writing and creating and dreaming. So we spend a lot of time imagining that those other people don't exist because they're doing what they do and things are working pretty well. In the absence of those people, things would be pretty, pretty awful, regardless of who you are.
You posed the question in your TED Talk that what if the real threat to society and democracy isn't posed by the other side, but the political and media elites who try to get us to think we'd be better off without the other side and use these differences to divide us, which is so mind-blowing to think about. How do you think we get to a place where we can stop viewing the quote-unquote other side as the enemy?
Yeah, I have very little empathy or understanding for those individuals who are capitalizing on these divides and making millions of dollars. I really don't. And you know, if you read the book, you'll understand. I have a very hard time with Fox News's business model in particular, especially because of the way that their opinion programming has gone, where it's not just analysis. It is oftentimes for like a Hannity or a Tucker Carlson or a Laura Ingraham, pushing information that is demonstrably empirically untrue in a really cynical way, and making and always reminding the viewer that the other side hates you, which I feel like is so dysfunctional, right? So dysfunctional. My sense is that the more we can recognize that we are the product that's being bought and sold, and that the more our emotions are triggered, the more beneficial it is for individuals who own these corporations. That to me is bonkers. And it's hard. It is hard as a person who's in these social media spaces. I'll read something and I'll be like, that's outrageous. And then I want to share it. I'm not always good at it, right? But so I'm like, hold on. Why is it written this way? Why do they have an interest in making you this angry? What are they hoping to get from you? And how is your data then going into some big spreadsheet, some big database, so that someone else can send you some micro-targeted advertisement for, organic waffles, right? So these are the kinds of questions that we have to ask ourselves. In terms of, I'm not exactly sure what the answer is in the context of regulation, because the United States has a longstanding tradition of free speech, the First Amendment, right? However, I think what we are going to see is that in some of these situations where the kind of hate, eventually, a lot of times there's an overlap between hateful, outrageous content and mis and disinformation, right? Because it's very hard to just push outrage and hate without telling a lie. Because remember, you gotta vilify those people. So a lot of times you're making stuff up. What we're seeing right now actually is some consequences, legal consequences for lies. So the Dominion voting machine company has filed a lawsuit against Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell, which is interesting to me from the standpoint of, would there be legal consequences then for lying to the public in service of a like hateful or outrageous content? Same with this social media influencer was arrested by the Department of Justice for his role in the 2016 election, pushing mis and disinformation, trying to tell African-American voters that they could vote for Hillary Clinton by text message, which was not true. And the Department of Justice has said that person now has been arrested for trying to disenfranchise those people. These are interesting to me because it says that we were struggling with how to deal with the free speech conundrum and mis and disinformation, but the legal system does have ways of saying, if you affect a company's bottom line by lying about them, or if you infringe upon someone's ability to vote by lying to them, there are going to be consequences for those things. So these are just some things that I'm keeping my eye on, because I do think that it is dangerous to talk about regulation, because who gets to decide what's true and what's not, especially when you're talking about like a Facebook or something. Do you want Facebook deciding what's true and what's not? Probably not. So these are very challenging questions.
You said in the TED Talk, despite all of the research that shows just how different liberals and conservatives are, you still have hope that we're not doomed to be as politically divided as we have been. Yeah. What are the reasons to have hope?
Yeah, I think the reasons to have hope are just when you communicate with regular people. And that's when you realize, oh, we can find common ground. We can communicate. We can even with folks who are maybe more conservative on issues of race or gender roles, you can get to a nugget of, every human being should be allowed to live autonomously and with dignity. There are nuggets in there. That is always what brings me optimism, always.
That was my conversation with Dr. Young. For more information, check out the show description to find her book and other resources. And if you love this episode, make sure to subscribe to the show. Until next time, remember you're loved, you matter, and you've got this.